Tonight's share continuing in topics of Tosha Mishpat, the ones we're discussing issues pertaining to what we commonly refer to as Hasagat Gevul. Now, what we call Hasagat Gevul is not really what the Torah calls Hasagat Gevul. The Torah refers to Hasagat Gevul. Well, Hasagat Gevul Ve'acha means that if you have a fence between your yard and your neighbor's yard, one day that you're not allowed to have that fence mysteriously move over a couple of feet into your neighbor's yard. That's the literal sense of Hasagat Gevul. And in fact, when most of the Rishonim use the term Hasagat Gevul, that's what they refer to. It's only a term that the Achronim use when we describe competition in business. So we borrow the phrase Hasagat Gevul. I believe I saw somewhere in an article that the first mention that we know of applying the actual Indian of Hasagat Gevul and claiming that competition in business may actually in some way relate to the issue of the right of Hasagat Gevul was a comment that the Marshal had made. So this is one of the very early Achronim. So this is obviously not the term that was traditionally used, but it is the common term that people use. But the real term that you find in Chazal is Yoridu Naso Shel Chavero, is to go into somebody else's business. Someone has a business, he has a profitable business running, profitable, not profitable, doesn't really matter, and you go and you take away his business. That's the term. So if you were to do a Bar Ilan search on Hasagat Gevul in the Gemara, you wouldn't come up with anything relating to our topic. You'd come up with a couple of interesting Gemaras. Now the questions of Hasagat Gevul are many. Specifically, every community at some point in time, every major Jewish community faces the question of the second pizza shop. Is it too much of a competition? But the first one, I'm sure Daniel remembers, yes, probably also when Shulos was going to open on Central Avenue, and there was a big fight because it's only a block away from Sabra's, and we all know this neighbor can't handle a second pizza shop. Right, now there's some more in between, and one more in between, and another one a block down, a block over. But there was a major issue, a major debate about whether they should have the right to open. They should not have the right to open another pizza shop. It's also a debate that rages when it comes to, dare we say it, new shuls that open up across the street from other shuls that are already in existence. Right, is that an issue of Hasagat Gevul? Is it costing somebody the vibrancy of their shul, or perhaps even the parnasa of the rabbi of the shul, if another shul opens up right next to them and takes away all of their balabatim, where it's going to cripple the other shul? That's also an issue of Hasagat Gevul. And obviously there are many, many other examples that we can come up with, and we'll try to go through as many as we can once we have a valid understanding of the sugya. But this is one of those topics that's going to be difficult to really get into the practical issues until we have some basic knowledge of the primary sugya that relates to this topic, which is the sugya Masechet of Basra. But before we even get into the sugya, I just want to go over a couple of hashkafic points that relate to the sugya, because I think it sets a good tone for the entire sugya. Because even though there may be a lot of kulas that we're going to find, it's important to know how we view these issues, both from the perspective of the attacker and the attackee, right? Both from the perspective of the person who's opening up a new business and from the perspective of the person who's had a business running. So certainly, Yoridu Naso Shel Chavero, while in certain instances may be mutter, is certainly not a positive thing. Chazal didn't view it as mitzvah Maisim Tovim to go and open up every time you find a pizza store, open up another pizza store next door. Right? It's certainly not something that Chazal looked at in favorable light. Haraya, the Gemara Matos and Das Chav Dalet. We're not going to read it inside, but you can take a look. The Gemara Matos talks about the yisodos of Judaism. Right? What are primary issues that every Jew should live his life by? And it says that David HaMelech managed to narrow it down to 11 things. There are 11 things that you have to do, and if you do these 11 things, that's the basis of everything else that involves being a good Jew. And one of those 11 things is not to be Yoredu Umasa Shel Chavero. That pretty clearly sets the tone for us in terms of how we view competing with other people unnecessarily, right? To just stop it. Yoredu Umasa Shel Chavero is certainly viewed in a very negative light. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam talks about the way a Talmud Chacham is supposed to conduct his business, which is a fascinating Rambam to read anyway. This is Kedai to read inside. If you look at the Rambam, source number 2, it says, Masa'an u'matan shel Talmidei Chachamim, the business dealings of the Talmud Chacham, of Talmidei Chachamim, be'emet u'be'emuna, always has to be with complete truth and with honesty. Omer Allah, la'avalin hin, A Talmud Chacham always has to say when something is no, it's a no, when it's a yes, it's a yes. There's no gray lines, everything has to be very clear and straightforward with a Talmud Chacham. But he has to keep careful cheshbon of himself. The no saying levatel la'achirim kishiyikach mehen, and he has to always give view positively and give to others when he takes something from them. He has to be very careful that he pays them fully and that they get their end of the bargain. They should have no tainas on him. Ve'lo'idaktik aleihem, and he shouldn't be medaktik on them. That he shouldn't be overbearing on them. The nose says the mayor left at the altar, a Talmud Chacham pays for something immediately, you get something, you pay for it, you don't wait and have them send the pink envelopes, right? You pay for something immediately. The Eno Natsa lo Ari Velo Kablam Velo Yavo Bar Shah, the Chayiv Atsum Bidibri Nakas Nakas Makum Shlo Tiva Usa Torah, they should Yamu Bidiburo. Unbelievable, the Rambam says. Even where the Torah does not require you to do certain things, a Talmud Chacham has to do those things. Talmud Chacham has to be more machmir on himself in business than anybody else. Lo yishanayu v'in yishchayvu lo achirim b'din marit lehen umoch lehen umalzah v'chonein v'lo yeruz v'tokum los chavero. He says that if a person owes you money, so you should give them time, and you should be malchah to them, and you should lend them, and you should be kind to them, and lo yarav v'tokum los chavero. A person should not be yored into his friend's business. It's interesting to read the context of that Rambam, obviously. I mean, everything else the Rambam is saying is only things that a Talmud Chacham does, things that are midas chassidus, things that are beyond what the letter of the law requires. And in that context, the Rambam says, yeah, and don't take away the guy's parnasa, which one would think should be halakhically related. So we'll see how this Rambam translates into the halakha. V'lo yitzala adam ba'olam b'chayim, k'lalo shel davar, he says. This, I thought, was a fascinating line. The bottom line is, if you're a Talmud Chacham in business, ye yevin hanir dafin v'lo min harodfin. A person has to better be someone who others take advantage of you than to be someone who takes advantage of other people. That's why not someone coming to come going to business. It's very hard to make a living if you're a Talmud Chacham in business, I guess. But those are the ground rules that the Rambam says. So on a hashkafic level, it seems that yored luminatos shel chaver is certainly not a good thing. However, from the other fellow's perspective, and again, this is from a hashkafic level, not a halakhic one, from the other person's perspective, the Chazanish points out, in a little kuntras he has called Anuna Bitakon, most of the Chazanish's writings are very difficult to understand, his halakh is very difficult to understand, and his hashkafic is very difficult to understand. Anuna Bitakon is also an extremely difficult sefer to understand, but in a short passage in Emunah V'Bitachon, the Chazanish writes that we have to realize that when we talk about these issues of Yored L'Nafsho Shel Chavero, we're not really talking about the Metzius. We're not really talking about that he's actually taking away my business. Why not, to the Chazanish? Because we have Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, Gemara in Bavashe tells us that what we're going to make each year, and the Gemara Bavashe adds, how much we're going to lose each year. Kishem Shem is a no social adam, says the Gemara, is already determined on Rosh Hashanah. Kishem Shem is a no social adam, Tzuvim Lomer Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says, Kach Chesro no sub shall adam, Tzuvim Lomer Rosh Hashanah. Exactly how much he's going to lose that year is already decided. Whether this guy successfully opens up a business right next to mine, or he does not open up a business next to mine, what I'm going to make and what I'm going to accomplish this year in my business has already been determined. It's too late to change that. That's what the Chazanish says. What's the whole discussion then? Should I just say, okay, I'm going to make what I make, I'm going to lose what I lose, I'll sleep till noon every day, why bother working at all? No, the Chazanish says, obviously there's a chiyuv of hishtadlus. The question of yored l'nafsho shel chavero is a question of to what extent your hishtadlus has to go. Do I have to fight him and tell him not to open up? Should I not fight him and let him open up? How far should my hishtadlus go? But that's the question. It's a question of hishtadlus. We should never have the attitude, this guy's killing me. The guy's not killing me. What the Ribbono Shel Olam decided what I'm going to have, which is a very difficult hashkafa to have when you see yourself losing money, to realize that this is all the Yad Hashem and that this is what the Ribbono Shel Olam decided, but this hashkafically what the Chazanish says the person is supposed to think. And the question is, what's my hashtadlus? Is my hashtadlus to fight him, or is my hashtadlus to let it happen? That's all on a hashkafic level. Now, in terms of halakha l'maisa, it's important to take a look at the sugyas themselves. There's only one sugya, really. It's one major sugya, at least. That's sugya in the Sefer Vavbatra on Daf Plus Aleph Amud Beis. Now, the Gemara Vavbatra tells us that it's a little bit jumbled, the various halachos. If I were arranging the Gemara, which you know, obviously wouldn't be qualified to do. But if I would rearrange the Gemara, I would reorganize it a little bit and not read it in order. So let's not read it in order, just so we can get it very clear. Look at source number 4 in the second line. Says the Gemara, Marchikin Mitzudas Hadag Min Hadag Kimelo Ritzas Hadag. That when a person, you have a fisherman, puts out his net to catch fish, and another fisherman wants to come along to catch his own fish, he can't put his net right in front of the other guy's net, so all the fish are going to come to his net, and the other guy's not going to get anything. He has to stay a certain distance, Kimelo Ritzas Hadag, whatever that is, a certain distance from the other guy's net so that he can get his own fish and he's not going to be bothering the other person's fish. The Kama, the Gemara says, how much is that? Amrav Arhuna ad parsa. Right? So we see ad parsa, you have to go even a great distance. A parsa is a very large distance and you have to stay that far away in order not to take away the other person's fish. And the Gemara says, Dagim are unique in this sense because for whatever reason, the Gemara says, because Yahavi Sayara, whatever that means. So what does that mean? Why are dugin unique? In the sense that you're not allowed to compete with fish, you're not allowed to put your net near the other guy's net. So Rashi explains, because what happens with fish? Fish are different than customers. And I'm running a business, I have customers that will come to me, and customers that will come to him. Fish are different than having customers come to you, and I'm stealing his customers. When I'm stealing his fish, it's much worse. Why? So says Rashi, in source number 5, the underlined Rashi, Nosnin ayin bahabata lios noagin lorot lumakom sharosh amazonos. They see food, they run to it. It's a natural instinct. They immediately swim to the food. Hilka, kivan shehikir zeforo, v'nosom mazonos, v'kof lo ritaso, once the first guy set up his net in a certain area, brought two akum sheyot edenu. He knows all the fish in that area are his. He's going to get all of them. Dabli commanded Makuliyadeh says, if they're his already, the ninsa chabero mahiko, and therefore when I come and I put my net around there, I'm being mazikim, I'm taking what's really his. Aval hata, but in the case where it's with business, mishaba etzli yavo, mishaba etzlicha yavo. I'm opening up another pizza store, I'll open my pizza store, you'll open your pizza store, and people will choose who has the best pizza. I remember when I was younger, I'm sure some of you guys remember this also, there was there were three shawarma stores simultaneously that opened up in Cedarhurst. And all three of them just out of the blue just decided to open up one day. Three stores selling the same thing. And Rabbi Tannenbaum said at the time that he went over to the first guy and said, you know, there are two other guys that are opening up the same business. They're opening up the shawarma. And then the first guy said, no, but they don't make shawarma like I make shawarma. And he went to the second guy and said, you know, there are two other guys. Said, no, they don't make shawarma like I make shawarma. And the third guy also, and he said, no, they don't make shawarma like I make shawarma. Each one was so confident that they're not going to, you know, that they're not going to be put out. Of course, they all have business. They're all on the only business which farming now is Yossi's Grill. But it's not a big swarm account. But the point is that when it comes to competing for customers, each person can say, look, you do your thing, I'll do marketing. Let people make their choice. Right? They'll have their own choice where to go. But when it comes to competing for fish, fish don't make choices, they see food and they go, and that's it. Right? So that's at least the way Rashi understands the issue of fish. The Mukhei Yosef takes it a step further, because fish is even worse. Because sometimes when you have the fish, it's not just that these are fish that would have gone to his net and now automatically come to my net. They would have intuitively just immediately gone to his net and now they come to my net. So the Mukhei Yosef says, they may have already gone to his net. Right? It could be that they were in his net, then you put your net down, they see more food, and they run the other way, and they leave his net. That, he says, is much worse. Right? Because then you literally took away money from him. The fish is money. It was in his possession. It was in his clay. It was in his net that he had put out there. And then you literally took it away from him. So that could be much worse. That's in terms of fish. The Gemara does not quote a cholek, does not quote anyone who disagrees with this issue of fish. Now, obviously, when it comes to paskin and halakha, we have to figure out what our equivalent of fishnets are. Right? Meaning, in terms of stores, what do we hold as a fishnet? Right? But first we have to see the next level down. The next issue the Gemara discusses, sort of wrapped around the fish issue, is if you look at the first line of that Gemara, Amar Rapuna, Haibar Mavua, the Oki Rechaya. If a person starts a mill, he sets up a mill in a town, the upper in a neighborhood, a mavoi we know from finishing Erevin, we know that a mavoi is pretty much a neighborhood. It's a large alleyway that has many chaseros that open up off of it. Chaseros are what we would probably call a small street, like a cul-de-sac. and the Mavoi would be a much larger street, so it has many small streets that come off of it. So the Mavoi includes all those caseros, it's like a neighborhood. So one person has a mechayim, he opens up a mill in that Mavoi, v'asur bar mavua chavrei v'kamoki gabei. And someone else opens up another mill in the same Mavoi, the same neighborhood. It says, Rafuna dinahu dima'ati gilodei. He can tell him, sorry, buddy, you can't open up here. I got here first. But in Malay, he can say, you're stopping my livelihood. You're not allowed to be here. Please leave. Right? That's the Shita of Rav Huna. Later in the Gemara quotes that there's a Cholik on Rav Huna. Rav Huna is not the widely accepted opinion. Right? Says if you look down toward the end, three lines from the end of that Gemara, Amar Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. It's a little confusing because the first sheet is Rav Huna, the second sheet is Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, a different Rav Huna, right? So Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, pshitali, it's obvious to me, bar masa ar bar masa achriti, masi ma'ati. If someone from out of town were to move into my mother, were to come into my mother and just open up a shop in my town, let's say you had a while ago, you still have, I think, there are many fruit stores in Central Avenue, right? So one of the fruit stores is owned by a guy who, let's say, who lives around here. Then another one is opened by a guy who's from Brooklyn. But the guy from Brooklyn figures he can charge $5 prices in the 5 town, make a better living out here. So he drives him from Brooklyn every day and opens up the food store over here. So it says, Rafuna Brizim, I'm not saying this halakha l'maisa in this case. I'm just giving an example for the Gemara. We'll get to the halakha l'maisa soon. So it says, Rafuna Brizim, pshitali, bar masa afriti nafim akeh. I'm from here, and I have my store here. You're from somewhere else. You can't come into my town and open up. You pay your taxes here, so then it's like you live here. Then you're a resident also, because you're paying your taxes, so I can't stop you. Here's the Kiddush, though, meaning that was also Kiddush, but here's what I want to focus on for right now. If another guy from my same neighborhood decides to open up a store next to mine, thank you, lo mati ma'ake, then I'm not allowed to stop him from opening up that store. So here you see Machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna says that I'm allowed to stop another guy from my neighborhood from opening up a store in my mavoi. Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, no, you can't. You can't stop someone else from your neighborhood, if he's from your same neighborhood, from opening up a store right near you. That's the Machlokes. Good. So how do we pass through this Machlokes? Obviously, is going to have major repercussions, major ramifications. Because if you pass through like Rav Huna, then your definition of Yoridu Masar Shal Chaver becomes very broad. Then any time you compete with me, even if you're a local also, and you can say, look, let's say you're a pediatrician, and I've been a pediatrician in town for a while. Another pediatrician moves into town, and he opens up his own. He puts his thing outside, the shingles outside, whatever it is, and he opens up his own office. So if we pass him like Rav Huna, I can tell him, I was here first. Put the sapphire in the PC. You're taking away my parnasa. You can't do that. Whereas if we pass like Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, there's no taina. He lives here now. He's allowed to open it up. The only time he would have a taina is if this pediatrician lives in Borough Park and just decided again. He'd rather work in the 5 towns. It's a growing area, so he'd rather be here. Right? Then he would have a taina. But according to Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, if he lives here, or even Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, if he pays taxes here, then he has every right to open up. So how do we paskin Machlokes Rav Huna versus Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua? So we skip the certain part of the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua is actually in agreement with the Shita of the Chachamim, which is a majority opinion. So that's what leads most of the Rishonim to say it's a majority opinion that Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua is following, and therefore we paskin like Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua that competition is permissible when it's two people from the same neighborhood. Then we certainly allow the competition to take place. Now the question is that so that's certainly how we pass in when it comes to mills, when it comes to opening up a mill. Now what if the guy lives from out of town? So as we mentioned, the Gemara says that Pshita, if the guy lives out of town and he starts opening up a business here, he can't. We could be ma'akev, we could tell him he's not allowed to open up a business here. But the Gemara says if he pays taxes, he's allowed to. The question is, if he pays taxes, he's allowed to do what? Is he allowed, does that allow him to do anything that allows him to open up a business, even within my mavoi, even within the same exact the same exact neighborhood that I'm in. So the Gemara is somewhat vague about that. Exactly what rights does he have? The Gemara asks that he has rights, if he pays taxes, full rights. He can open up mamish in my neighborhood. The Ramah, however, disagrees. And obviously, as Ashkenazim, Shitas Ramah is very critical over here. The Ramah says, even if he pays taxes, he can open up in the same ear, in the same city that I'm in. He can't open up in the same mavur that I'm in. He can't open up in the same neighborhood. So the mashal, right, I don't know, you know, if this is exact, if this is 100% precise, but if I have a store in, you know, in Cedarhurst on Central Avenue, and let's say right near the Sabra's area of Central Avenue, and someone else wants to open up a store in Woodmere, like near the Pizza Fires area, right, even though we may be drawing from the same clientele, it's not the same neighborhood, and therefore, as long as the guy pays his taxes, right, as long as he's paying taxes in that place, he's considered a resident, and competition is 100% permissible. Now, if we were to stop right here, Sabras and Shulas, let's go back to that. I'm not going to pass in that shadow years later. Obviously, it's a neighborhood passing that we can support everybody, right? But when that debate started, let's say the Five Towns was not taking off and was not growing at the rate that it was. When Shulas decided to open their doors, if we were to stop the shear right here, so if we were to bring would be saying, yes, they may be paying taxes, but the way that I'm up Hoskins, that doesn't allow them to open up in my neighborhood. That only allows them to open up in my general city, but not in my neighborhood. I mean, it's right down the block. That may be called my neighborhood. So what's the svara? Why would it be mutter? Is this something you don't even have to go further into halacha? You just think in svara. What was a neighborhood back then? What were they talking about? They had a Central Avenue. You know, Central Avenue, what did they have? They had, you know, you had houses, and you opened up a store, and another house, you opened up a store. Now we have the garment district. Right? What does it mean? Every single store sells the same thing. Right? And then the diamond district. Every single store sells the same thing. Do they kill each other? Do they hurt each other? No, it doesn't bother them. Right? They're loaning them. Adarabah. It helps them. The more people you draw to the area, the better it is. And if someone knows, if they want to get diamonds, they go to the diamond district. Everyone knows exactly where to go. They know exactly where to find the store. Because there are million stores that sell it over there. So the competition doesn't actually hurt each other, it actually enhances each other. When you have a center where everybody comes for stores, or maybe it could be argued, the same type of store, so it could be argued that it only helps to grow the business and not to hinder the business, not to hurt the business. When you're in a muggle, you're in your own little neighborhood, and it's not a place where it's a central avenue that everyone comes to from all the surrounding areas to go shopping. So then, in a chinami, you have a major competition problem. But it could very well be argued that when everyone comes to the same place to go shopping, it's not a competition problem. We're only helping each other through the competition. That's one svara. We'll see if there are other svaras maybe to be makel as well. That's at least a svara to be makel. Now, what's going to be critical, though, is we pointed out that although it's true, when it comes to mills, when it comes to one guy setting up a mill, the other guy setting up a mill, the halacha follows the Rav Breizer of Yeshua, that competition is permitted generally, right? It's only if the guy is from out of town that we have problems with competition, right? So generally, competition should be mutter when everyone's from the same town, right? If Shulos, right, that's the other point, by the way, Stavros and Shulos, if the owners both live in the same town, they both come from this area, then certainly they're allowed to both open up shop. It doesn't matter who was there first. Right? Then there would be nothing to discuss. The whole discussion of Ramah that limits them to a different neighborhood but the same city is only when one of them, when the second guy came from out of town. If the second guy's from in town, they're both from in town, then they're certainly allowed to open up shops. There should be no issue whatsoever. So where we have a problem, though, is we said, whatever we consider modern-day fishnets, right? The fishnets, the Gemara said, that's the problem. So the question is, how do we define the difference between fishnets and competition? Right? The fishnets, I'm putting my nets out, I'm catching the guy's fish, so that, before they go into his net, that's for sure rusted. So first, before we say that's for sure rusted, we have to ask ourselves, is it for sure rusted? The Gemara quoted Milcholi, just said the halacha, that someone else has his fishnet out, I'm not allowed to put my fishnet anywhere near his, and the Gemara didn't quote anyone who argues in it. However, the Rif, and you know how the Rif talks in halacha, the Rif quotes the parts of the Gemara that he thinks are halacha l'maisa and just leaves out the rest, and he leaves out whatever we don't have to like. So while the Rif discusses the issue of opening up the Rechayim, the Rif leaves out the halacha of putting out the Mitzvah Sadagim, of putting out the fishnet. That leads you to believe that the Rif disagreed with that stock of the Gemara. Difficult to understand why. No one argued on that stock of the Gemara, but it leads you to believe that the Rif disagreed with it. The Rambam leaves out that stock of the Gemara. The Rambam leaves out the idea of putting out the fishnet. Also leads you to believe that maybe the Rambam didn't agree with that stock of the Gemara. He just looked at it entirely. For the Rambam, it's uncharacteristic. Meaning, for the Rif, he leaves it out and he doesn't hold like it. For the Rambam would mention it and then tell you the other way. And then everyone would ask Kashas, why does Rambam go against the Gemara? And he has 50 Sfarim written on it. But it's uncharacteristic for the Rambam to just leave something out. But the Rambam leaves it out, indicating perhaps that he doesn't hold this whole idea of fishnets. Maybe it's mutter to put out a fishnet. The Me'iri says it befeirish, right? The only one that has the guts to say, whenever you're looking for a fiddish, and you think there's a fiddish out there, and it's just none of them show them say it, chances are the Me'iri says it. The Me'iri is always the one, he's always willing to go out on a limb, and he always says something with good copy. He thinks like an Achron very often, always has a nice twist on the sugya, or Shaka always says, want to give a little sabura, always, when the sugya, none look at the Me'iri, and your sabura is done. Because he'll always come up with a twist that's different than everybody else. But the Me'iri says, befeirish, he says that Mitzvah Sadagim, you're allowed to put out your own fishnet. The guy has his fishnet, you're allowed to put out yours. So it would seem that it's not so pashut, this whole issue of the fishnet. It's not so pashut that it's a problem. And you hear me say the word fishnet, so why is it practical at all? And we'll see very soon that it's extremely practical how we view the fishnet issue. So it's not so pashut that it's a problem. However, we generally assume, like the pashtus of the Gemara. Now, why would everyone disagree? Why would some of the Rishonim disagree with the Gemara? It could be that the way those Rishonim learned the Gemara is that the Gemara introduced the din of Dagim before it introduced Rakun of Rav Yeshua. Once it introduces Rakun of Rav Yeshua and how he really passes in the end, it could be that they take that as understanding. Once the Gemara links Rakun of Rav Yeshua to the Tachadim, it could be that they understand the Gemara is rejecting the earlier cited halacha about the fishnet. But we generally assume that the fishnets are rusted. It's just important to know that some might hold that it's mutter, because when it comes to finding studim lahakel, and it comes to finding different reasons why we want to be maker in certain situations, it's important to know that at least there's this theoretical position of Rishonim out there that the fishnet issue may not be an issue at all, may not be a problem at all. Now, what is the modern-day fishnet? What exactly is the issue that we say we would be machmir and hasagas kavul in this type of case? So the most well-known or the most prominent shita on this topic is found in probably one of the least looked at Rishonim in modern learning, probably, and that is the Mordechai. If you ever look in the very back of the Gemara, I'm sure you've seen Mordechai in your life. They're very tiny letters, first of all, no one ever reprinted it. And the Gersotos are completely messed up, all over the place. It's very difficult to read a Mordechai. Ashkenazim didn't really know how to keep Rishonim well. All the good Rishonim were starting with. The Ashkenazim had a very difficult time keeping the Rashi from living in Sephardic countries. That's why it's so good. But for whatever reason, it went neglected. And the Mordechai, there are a lot of Gersotos, Gersoprons that fell in there. But anyway, the Mordechai quotes the Shita of the Avi Asaf. The Shita of the Avi Asaf is the primary Shita that is discussed in Shulchan Aruch when it comes to the fishnet. So the Avi Asaf, if you live on a dead end, well, let's say there's storefronts on a dead end street. It's unusual to have storefronts on a dead end. But you live on a dead end and there's storefronts on a dead end street. And toward the end of the dead end, there's pick a store, a pizza shop, right? So the Avi Asaf, it's usher to open up a pizza shop closer toward the opening of the dead end street. Why is it usher? He says that's like, well, the way the Rama understands it at least, that's like Mitzvah Sadagim, that's like putting out the fish. Why? It's exactly like the fish case. Here are these fish swimming downstream, they're going to go into this guy's net. Right? They're swimming in that direction, they're going to go into this guy's net. What do? I put my net over there. I catch all the fish in my net. What am I doing? I have this dead end street. Here's the pizza store everyone's going to go through. What do? I put my pizza store right there. I block everyone off. They're walking down the street. They're not going to wait until they hit the second pizza store. They'll pass by. Oh, we'll see a sign. Pizza. They'll go into my pizza store. That, the Avi Asaf says, is Asir. There's a little note on the side, an even tinier print, on the side of the Avi Asaf that says, Hagah. It says, this is only if you pass from like Rafuna. Beit Yosef. That's how Beit Yosef understands. That only if you pass the letter of Luna, do you hold that's a problem. However, and that's in fact what the Shulchan Aruch holds. Shulchan Aruch holds this whole idea of Sat is nothing to worry about. However, the Ramah Paschim, and no, even according to us, who Paschim are from the Brit Rishua, the Aviyah Sat meant this literally. How does the Aviyah Sat understand fish? What does he understand as the problem of fish? When you're going to kill the guy, when you're going to cripple the guy's business. You're literally going to ruin his business, and there's no doubt that you're going to ruin his business. So that's the case where Asogas Kavul is a problem, according to everybody, says the Aviyah Sat, even according to the Brit Rishua. So, it would come out that the pizza shop issue was not as simple as we thought, right? You have stoppers there. Shulas wants to open up, yeah. Right? So they always discuss it. So yeah, Shulas wants to open up the second pizza shop. So what we said before, based on the break of Yeshua, as long as they both live in this town, Shalom Aleichem, everyone can open up. Right? But now the Aviyah Sat says, but wait a second. If you're going to cripple the guy, if you're going to make sure that the guy's not going to be able to make any money, he's never going to be able to make a living, so then you can't do it. You can't open up and ruin the guy's business. Now, the Aviyah Sat paints a picture of how would it be a situation where you cripple the guy's business, where it's a dead-end street, and they would never get to his store, because they would never get that far. He assumes that if the street's open on both sides, like Central Avenue is, and people can come from Winry and they can come from Lawrence, some people will see Sabra, some people will see Shulas, and people will stop in either one. Right? But what if there just aren't enough people to make it work? It would seem that the Aviyah Sat would hold that's up there. In fact, is a well-known Tshuvas HaRamah that uses the sheet of the Aviyah Sat prominently. The Ramah was asked, apparently there was an old printing of the Rambam. The Mishnah Torah of the Rambam was printed by the Maran Padova, and the Ramah was asked about a new group of people that had come to reprint the Rambam. And they were going to make a new Mishnah Torah. Now, the way that Rama writes it, if you look, I underlined some key lines in source number 14, you see right away where he's leaning. He says, Hale agon morena rahra meir from yitarava vimei shot so mag mosav rayonav makshavosav. He put all his energy and his thoughts and everything into this. Vishtakit mekum yanche atum. He got together with other people and they all decided lahat tisat ibura gadol Mishnah Torah, and they decided to print the Mishnah Torah. And he says, and everything was done so well, and everything was done so nicely. And then, and he says, and the Beis Yosef even like, well, that may be, I'm not sure what over here from the Bible TV is like a footnote that was added later on what the Rama says. And it says, and the Beis Yosef even liked this printing of the Rambam. Everyone loved this printing of the Rambam. It was the greatest printing of the Rambam known to mankind before the Frankel edition, I guess, that came out recently. But this was the most fantastic printing of the Rambam. And then, he may come after Gamkin, some guy gets up and he decides, Vamaresa Gamanoti Lebesi. He says, I'll do the same thing. Va'adkisanoti Gamani, and I'll also print the Rambam. The Chaynasan, that's what he did. So he goes ahead and this other guy prints the Rambam. So now who's going to buy the old Rambam? About half the people that would have bought the old Rambam, but the new guy not printed it. So the Ramah was asked, so what do we do? Is it mutter to buy the new Rambam? Do you have to buy the old Rambam? Is this a problem of what we call a Sogas Kavul? What is called in Gemara terms, Yorei Dum Nafsu Shokavero. This guy, the original printer, made his living by printing the Rambam. Someone else comes along and prints it. So if you look later on in that source, he quotes out of Gemara, Amr Avuna, Haibar Mavur, Dokum Rechai, Vasubar Mavur, Chavir, come open Gabay. One guy opens the mill, another guy comes, opens up another mill. Dina, who's in the Akevalay? You have the right to stop him. Umashmami, the Ta'amar, Vu'uki Gabay, Sha'asa, Dabar Zeb, Diyaziyaso. That the guy did it with the first guy's knowledge, the Afiru Hafi Yakala Akevalay, says the Ramah. Even when the first guy knew what was going on, he could stop the second guy from continuing. In Canaan, I mean, Nenu, but he says in this case, Shemi Dinenu, Aimali, whatever the guy's name is, Shemi Lahat, is a cloud. He had no right and no one knew what he was doing, and he just went and did it. So certainly we would not allow it. What's the problem with that raya, with that first raya? He quotes the Shita of Rafuna. We don't pass them like Rafuna, we pass them like Rafuna for sure, who allows it. So the Rama says, yeah, I'm aware of that. But then he quotes the Aviyah Sat. And he says, the Aviyah Sat says, when you're going to cripple the guy, you're going to ruin his business, you can't do it. And over here, you're going to ruin his business. He says, so certainly over here, in this case, everyone would agree, if you're going to ruin his business, it's Bari Hazeka is what he calls it, certain to damage him and to ruin him. So certainly we talked to him in that case, that you're not allowed to do it. That's the first reason he gives to have a problem with it. Then he goes on and he says, And by the way, you should be aware, he says, there's another halakha, that when a Talmud Chacham does something, you have to treat a Talmud Chacham, just like we said, a Talmud Chacham has to treat others differently in business, and a Talmud Chacham always has to be giving and always honest and always, you know, he can't be like, he can't be a true businessman. So too, others have to treat a Talmud Chacham differently. The Rabbi writes in Perish Mishnah and others, of all places, in Pirkei Avos, the Rambam writes how you're not allowed to use your Torah as a way to receive kavod. And the Rambam screams and yells about people who take money to learn Torah and people who use their Torah for other people to support them and say, you got to support me. I'm learning. I'm doing the most important thing in the world. You have to support me. You have to give me money. You know, this is what a horrible, horrendous thing that is. And they're using their Torah as a weapon against other people, and they should get a job like everybody else. Whatever, he goes on and on about it. But then he says at the end, well, you should know when he does get a job, so you should know how to treat a Talmud Chacham. The way they used to treat the Chofetz Chaim, apparently, right? They used to say the Chofetz Chaim, which closed his stores and if you made enough money that day, so all the Jews better store early so you can close up already, so you can learn, right? The Talmud Chacham, the Ramses takes them tomorrow. He has the right to sell first. No one else is allowed to sell their stuff before he's sold out. Once he's sold out, everyone else sells. The Ramses says, that's not called getting covered from Talmud Chacham, because that's like the Kohen getting Truma. Kohen gets Truma, lady gets Maitra, the Talmud Chacham gets to sell the stuff first. Right, that's the way we treat a Talmud Chacham. So he says, the first master, Smaran Padova, he was a great Talmud Chacham. Right, he's the one we should be supporting. Then some other yacht comes along and decides he's gonna sell the Rambam. Even if he was allowed to sell the Rambam, he has to wait till the first guy sells out. He has to wait till he's done, till he has everything he needs, and only then can he sell. So anyway, the Rambam says, and he goes on with more arguments and more riots that certainly the second person has no right to sell the Rambam.
Saying that he first has to sell out, or he could do it, or he cannot do it permanently.
Well, the Rambam didn't allow it at all. He said he can't buy from the guy. He said, but that's their tuition.
Societal intellectual improvement.
So the Rambam also adds it wasn't an improvement. He just took all the other guys' work and.
Zero.
Yeah, basically, for the zero, right. So he didn't actually do anything with it. He didn't put his work into it. He wasn't a Talmud Chacham. He didn't know what to do with it. Right? So Rambam Talmud did all the work. And then this guy just, you know, as soon as one guy does the work, it's very easy. Right? So he did it. He represented it with his own, you know, he had his own place that he did it. So
the
Rambam
doesn't mention that the law of
of Yorid and Nasr Shalchaveh. Yeah. The Talmud Chacham should not be Yorid and Nasr Shalchaveh, but he himself...
Because he's
going to
have
an
unfair advantage, because then suddenly everyone is going to...
He's going to automatically go to him. Interesting. That could be the Talmud Chacham, meaning he's assuming it would actually work that way. And I don't know how often it actually works this way. But, yeah. So anyway, so that's the sheet of the Aviyah Sof, and that's the sheet of the Aviyah Sof in action. And when you're going to cripple the other guy, you're going to ruin the other guy. There's what I'm not saying. So that's nice. You're going to ruin the other guy. You can't do it. Now, others don't take it that far, but also say something similar. Shalshub is Masas Ben Yamin. I'm not sure who it is, but it's according to this picture. Writes that, let's say there's a law in town that that you can only have one of a certain type of store in this city. That's the law. So you say, okay, there's one guy there already. I'm going to open up. Then we'll close one of us down. I'll take the chance to see what happens. So says Masas Ben Yamin, then we can't allow it. Competition cannot be allowed in such a case. Where there's not even a theoretical possibility that we'll both survive, then you have to shut it down. So it doesn't go quite as far as Brahma and the Aviyah Sof, where they say that if it's likely that you'll cripple the other guy. He says only if it's definite that somebody's going to go down, that it's not going to work. Like, we could have bet when the three shawarma stores opened up that two of them were not going to work. It wasn't going to happen. And so then, it's just not a...
Are you talking legally or economically?
This is halakhically, right, legally. Well, now, in terms of...
Legally, halakhically, from a legal perspective...
Either one. If they can't survive, whether it be economically they can't survive, or legally the government's going to shut them down. Bottom line, he's not going to be able to make a living. So then we would stifle the competition. The whole idea of stifling competition is pretty much antithetical to our American values.
Right.
You know, we believe in free commerce and being able to, you know, competition is what makes it greater, what makes people drives people to be better. So we do recognize that to an extent. But much less so, meaning we do recognize the idea that someone may be doing a terrible job and someone else may come in and be doing a much better job. That's the Aruch HaShulchan already points out. Let's say, can I go in? open up another store and start selling things for cheaper, right? We got to, I'm allowed to open up another store. If I'm from the same neighborhood, I'm allowed to open up another store. So we got to do that anyway. Can I sell things for cheaper than the other guy, right? Can I lower the prices? So the Aruch HaShulchan makes a chiluk, which is, I think it's common economic terms nowadays, that he says, if you're pricing lower, more fairly, then you can do it. And not the other, mitzvah to do it. Why should the Torah's cost all the money shall Yisrael? Why should it cost everybody all this money that they should have to pay the higher prices? So if you can price fairly, so more fairly than the other guys, so good, go ahead and do it. But if you have predatory pricing, where you're going ahead and you're lowering the prices beyond where anyone could ever make money, just to get the guy out of business, and once he's out of business, either pick up your prices, either you have more of a cushion to fall back on, or for whatever reason, you can afford to lower the prices to an unreasonable extent, because that's terrible, that's awesome to do. That's literally trying to kill the other guy. That you can't do. You can push him to be more fair, but you can't literally try to shut him down in that way.
Would you say price wars are illegal then? Right now, El Al and other airlines are fighting, they're cutting their prices really low.
So if they're cutting the prices to an extent, I can't imagine that they would cut their prices, I don't know what's going on, but if they cut the prices to an extent where none of them could ever continue doing business that way, and they're just waiting until the other guy goes out of business so that they can pick their prices back up, that should be a problem. There should be some sort of intervention or something. I mean, it won't be, but that should be a problem. The Rashba has a different take on it. The Rashba says, it may not be a problem if you can't both survive. But the Rashba says a different chiddush, that if he has customers, and this is the way he understands the fish issue. What's the chiddush about the fish? And he understands it more like the Nimuka Yosef understood the fish. Remember, Rashi had said that when I put my net, the fish are never going to go to his net, they're going to come straight to my net, but they would have gone to his net if I was to put mine out there. And Nimuka Yosef said, no, they could already be in his net, now they're going to come out to mine. Rashi says, when someone else has customers, I'm not allowed to steal his customers. I can't go out asking for his customers. I can't go out trying to lure his customers to come into my store. That I'm not allowed to do when it's his customer. Now, how do you define his customer is also not exactly a simple matter to do, right? You have, my barber retired this year, this past November, so I get haircut plus frequently. Well, not comfortable yet. But he went down to Florida and he retired. So I went to another barber shop, same barber house. Yes, I went to another barber shop, and the guy was telling me how he can't make a living and it's so difficult. And he was pressing my mom the whole time I was getting a haircut, how it's impossible to make a living. And then he started to talk about the other barber on Central Avenue. And it says, when my customers walk by his store, he comes out of his store and goes, come in here. Which I can't imagine works, like for a haircut. But he says that's what he quoted, that's what the other guy does. I mean, this guy actually is coming here and informed me that when he sees that he wants to kill him. But anyway, that made me very comfortable. But he actually didn't want to take my fist and kill him. But anyway, he was giving me this frightened. But the point is, that's what the Rashba says he can't do. The guy has customers, he can't go and specifically take his customers. Rashba talks about there's a certain prince or an official or somebody who had hired a tailor, and that was his tailor. Like, I think it was Seinfeld episode, no, it's a barber. You remain loyal to the guy, you have to remain loyal to the guy. That's the idea. You can't, and obviously he's messing up, you can leave him, but when you're not allowed to have such luring other people's customers away once they're known to be their customers. That's the sheep of the Rashba. But it seems that the most expansive view of this is that of the Ramah and the Aviyasa, that whenever you're going to cripple the guy, you can't open up the store. Right? You can't even open up the store. Now what about the Shiloh we've been waiting for, starting a shul right across the street from another existing shul? Isn't that also an issue of Hasagas Kavod? So fascinating children of Moshe. We have three children that are, or three Mara Makomos, that are chronologically in reverse order, and you'll see why I do that. But Moshe had a tshuva. That's okay. But Moshe had a tshuva in where is it? Yeah, Moshe in source number 18. You look at the tshuva. It's a long tshuva. We're not going to read the whole thing. I underlined the parts that I wanted to. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. He says, if you look at the first underlying section, the Dvar HaRebbe, the Chassidish Rebbe, so right away you know he's not talking about this name, should tell him the Elish is following as well, who has titles on the guys who used to daven by him, Miyom Shekhanah Bekhaknes Shalom, from the day that he bought his shul, Karov the Shalosh Shalom, which was raised 3 years ago, Va'achar Kafiyastu Begvilo Beis HaKnes HaZateh, within his basic vicinity, they opened up another shul, Asher Al Yidei Zeh, he sigled Vulo, and through the opening up of the other shul, he drew, the second shul drew people away from the first shul, V'kipchu Parnasasa, and it took away the first of his Parnasa, right? He had his Parnasa was the shul, now he has half the Balabatim, he has half the Parnasa. We got who's will she would take Knesset Shalom, and the shul is worthless now. Before that, there's no way he'd be able to sell it without taking a major loss. Why not? It's hard to sell something that's set up as a shul as a house, right? It's hard to sell something that's set up as a shul to sell it as a house because it's already set up as a shul. Hard to sell it as a shul when there are other shuls all over the place. I mean, there's not a need for this shul anymore. The shul isn't really necessary anymore. So it became very difficult for this guy. And he says, "Va'af sheisham ol beis haknesah v'leinu l'fi ruach ha'yireyim." He says, what about the third shul in town? He says, the third shul in town, that's out of the equation because the people there aren't Yerei Shemayim. Okay? So he says, the people there aren't Yerei Shemayim, so something we talk about, we don't discuss whether you go to that shul or you don't go to that shul. Obviously, that's out of the question. If the people there aren't Yerei Shemayim, you don't have them there. Okay. The Hain Yeshivu, so what did they find out? The people who were running away opened up the new shul, so they had to have a say, right? They had to have an excuse. Everyone always has a reason why they're opening up a new shul, right? I remember when Rabbi Wurzburg, the Kohen of Rav, once told me that when the Nusach Sfarad Minyan opened up in Shaare Tzila, right? Shaare Tzila used to be a big shul, and a lot of the young crowd wanted a different type of shul, so they said, oh, we need Nusach Sfarad. So they opened up a Nusach Sfarad Minyan downstairs. Rabbi Wurzburg told them from the outset, he said, don't think I'm stupid. I understand that the text is a pretext. I understand that the whole reason you're opening up the Minyan is because you want to get away. But whatever, he allowed it and he supported it. But whatever it was. So they opened up the Minyan. But, so what's the excuse of these guys? I'm sure you know that. So what's the excuse of these guys opening up the new shul? So it's the Hain Yeshivu, Ki lo haya echelon was followed based on Shul Rav Zeh. They said the problem is, as often they say, the rabbi. The rabbi of the original shul, the rabbi was terrible. Why? He kept shimuyim b'nusuf. I know that has to be the rabbi, but the rabbi has the wrong nusuf. Ubenigun ha'tfila, doesn't sing the right song. That's no good. Asher hu bilbul gadol ha'misfal v'shul hu v'lubazef. People aren't used to his style of davening, get all confused and they don't know what to do. V'gam mitzvat shedarko shal harav. Here's the kicker. The shedarko shal harav, apparently this rab's style is l'kalel, to curse. Lahap doesn't mean curses like things you can't say on TV. It means like to degrade people. Lahap hidden to scare people. Later he describes what he does. It's hard to imagine. I don't know what he did with the kids after that. It says for this rabbi, Ulevazos, and he would embarrass people. Kamoshi erases a pamin. She's a kosher lispel. It's not hard to take already. The rabbi in the shul, the rabbi's always screaming and he's yelling at them. And he says, and you're the one. And he'd point at people and he'd single people out there. People do this. I've been in shuls where someone says, you, if you don't believe in God, why don't you go somewhere else? Right? And where the rabbi just sat in front of everybody. So it was very difficult to take. V'gam she'ezim espalim shem zbils lu'et rabba matzadik. And he said, aside from that, some of the espalim in that shul were mezalzel, the rebbe of the people who are leaving. I mean, they had a rebbe from yeshiva or something, and the other guy is sitting next to them at shul, making fun of their rebbe, who's a great tzadik, she'ez shem lu'et rabba. That they can't take. Well, paying Haylam Harishus, the bird was more basic than his opposite, and that's why we need to make our own shul. The Omru Shalom Asu Shumtu Ula, he said, we didn't do it, look at the bird, the Hamshikha Nashu Shiafu Besin Shalom, and then we didn't do any advertising, we didn't ask people to come. People, what was the time to come? Half the shul just got up, made their own shul, and that's it. If you want to come, you can come. We're not going to, we're not going to say anything. Whoever wants to come, to come. But that was the fight. Now the question is, who's right? The Sezer of Moshe, unbelievable. He says, Lo hay rishus, lo lahem, lo lishamadam, liyakid nesek nes ta'akhar b'makam ha'samot. You can't start the new shul. Sha'al yidei zeh, vadei shahar bim e'ilu, shal yuholkim et dog, shlo hayu miyak nesek nes ta'akhar, yelku nesek nes ta'akhar she used to. You start the new shul, the first rabbi is going to resolve his business. Because if you go get down to the next paragraph, because shken hacha, shem yakid nesek nes ta'akhar, eino laharvata. the New Shul is not a profit. It's not a for-profit organization. It's a non-for-profit organization. It's more often, Rav Moshe says, to open up a non-for-profit that's going to compete with somebody's parnasa than to open up a for-profit that's going to compete with somebody's parnasa. Because when you open up a for-profit, so you have to be careful. You have to make sure you make your money also. So you know, you have limits beyond which you can't go. Whereas it's not for profit, we do whatever we want. We have unlimited funds. Do whatever. It doesn't matter for us so much. So then it becomes much more dangerous, what Moshe says. And then he says, we go in the next paragraph. Kim shu davar aser dvar istermid in yoredu muskavero lo shayich ha'hakid b'shvol ha'tenus b'shimun is called for mitzvah b'shimun ha'inigun b'tzilah. So Moshe says, well, the nusach is different, the nigin is different, Roshon Yom Kippur, a little different nigin, shekalach in the skal mitzvah ha'sidah. He says, I understand. So read your sidah, and you'll read. If you read your sidah, you'll see the right nusach. Shein ha'adil b'm v'vachot b'tzilah, v'kol shkei ha'kri shkvar hugu l'shol shalim. He says, wait, you've done this for 3 years. All he's doing for the last 3 years. Shekhar Nisragu Behem. The Chin Sharatai Zvashi Ira Shekilo Zehidchud Vishul Shekiru Vizilzel is upon the Inkadai Lahati Yisrael Lechayim. He says, yeah, he got a little angry a couple of times. That's because of the way they were treating him. And usually here Rav Moshe heard his side of the story also. And so the only guy he wants, and it was because of what the Yishan heard that they said to me. And this and that. So whatever, he was a reasonable person who lost it once in a while. And in general, his idea was Hapkid. He's a fiery personality. He gets strong muscle. That was the way he dealt with things. But that doesn't mean that he's a terrible person, that you should take away his parnasa. So the a couple of more lines goes to the next phrase is Lachain. Imatam shahot misham hutam kalush. Says, if the reason they left is a weak reason, they're just making excuses, and it's not a legitimate reason, then they can't do it. If it's a legitimate reason, then they can do it, but if it's an illegitimate reason, they can't do it. So what is a legitimate reason? So he doesn't really go through all of them, what the legitimate reasons are. Certainly he holds the Shumari Nusuk is not a legitimate reason, the Nigunim is not a legitimate reason, presumably, if there's no Kavadat Tefillah, it's a legitimate reason, right? Presumably, he writes, if there's no Yerushalayim, it's a legitimate reason. And another thing, I'm not sure if I saw this in Rav Moshe, no, others write. If you look, I don't know if I even got it in here somewhere, yeah, the Tisbichut, it's source number 21. He says, if you have a situation, he says, where look toward the end of the, toward the end of that passage, the actual recovery rock coming in the machlokas in the scotus themselves there. If you just see that there's two cousins here that aren't going to get together, it's not going to work. They're not going to get along with each other, and it's not going to help to try to make shalom. It's just not going to work. They can't be in the same shul. So tofu sheis kol kol kasiyatma. Better for each one to have their own shul. V'lo shayichah, v'lo cheskasa, v'lo cheskasa hosa. Forget about their shuls in your 400 years. It doesn't matter, right? If that's the situation, then certainly you have a shul. And if you look at the Lashon of Ramah, the Ramah is also pretty clear. Ramah writes, right above that description, of him wrote some Lidmos and Beis HaKnesset out there, or Yechidim Abam, Lidmos and Beis HaKnesset, Ein HaKeim Yechol Nunchos Yadam, Ba'amolche, Ro'in Yenazitha. You shouldn't start up. You shouldn't make a mistake about it when someone wants to start a competing shul. Now, it's important to note also, the whole idea of the Svara we mentioned at the beginning, the whole idea of Rav Moshe is in a case where the case happens to have been Brooklyn. So the case where the neighborhood is completely saturated with Jews. Every house is already, a Jew already lives in every house. There are millions of shuls. And this shul is getting killed now. Another shul, it's not like more people are going to move in. It's not like it's going to help in any way. The shul is getting killed when you open up a new shul. Because they're not taking new people. There are no new people. It's just taking people from one. It's transferring people that are already there without drawing anybody in. Remember, we said this right at the beginning of the show, which a lot of Kosim hold by, and that is why the Diamond District, okay, that I'm allowed to open up my Diamond Store next to that guy, because when you create a situation where people want to go to that general vicinity for business, that I know I want diamonds, I go to the Diamond District, so I'll go to the place where that general vicinity becomes a more appealing area, everyone wins. Right? They may not feel at first like they're winning, but in the end of the day, if you make an area a more appealing area, that people are going to want to come, and it becomes a place where it's considered to be a more vibrant area, everyone's going to win. Some are going to end up one place, some are going to end up another place, and everyone's going to be happy in the end of the day. The whole situation was where one guy was literally killing the other guy's parnasa. Right? Can you imagine that the shul opens up, and right away the rabbi loses his whole parnasa. That's one major discussion that comes up a lot of times when it comes to Hasagas Gevul is when it comes to the Shul. Now, the other issues of Hasagas Gevul that are pertinent, there is so much an issue of Hasagas Gevul, but the Gemara points out at the end of that Gemara that yeshivos is no Hasagas Gevul ever. There's no yard in Hasagas Gevul with yeshivos. You could always open up another yeshiva. Why? Because kinasof and kavachachma. The more competition there is in yeshiva, the better everyone's going to be, and that's our lifeline. That's our lifeblood. That's the Jewish people live because we're able to educate the next generation properly. And the more competition there is, the more we're going to be, people will push each other to educate properly. So that's kinasof and kavachachma. Always better to push for the competition with yeshivas. That's never a bad thing. The question is, how does that apply to other areas of kedusha? Right, you saw with Moshe, obviously doesn't hold that by a shul. He doesn't say the more shuls the better, and maybe the one with the nicest davening wins. Because very often, the one with the least nice davening wins. Right? Very often the one that, will finish the earliest, and we'll have the hottest condition. The priorities aren't always exactly what they're supposed to be in terms of the tefillos. So it doesn't work that way necessarily when it comes to shuls. But what about other issues of Kedusha? So there's a tshuva that... someone was asked, I forgot who the tshuva was already, I think it's called by the tshuva somewhere, about opening up a new mikvah. Right? Someone had a mikvah, they want to open up another mikvah in town, and it's going to ruin the panasa of the first mikvah. So there's a story that somebody had thrown the quote, and it may be an issue of kinosof and tabakasa. It's not literally kinosof, because no one's getting better from it, but maybe the newer, nicer mikvah is not a bad thing for the community in general. However, Rav Moshe does have another tshuva where he discusses Avada Kashrus, right? So there was Avada Kashrus in the town of Pittsburgh. And Avada Kashrus was a town where some other guy came into town and decided he was going to give his own mishkata. Rav Moshe says, I don't care who the guy is. The guy could be a Muslim, a Tamil, a Shemayim, and a Tamil Kaf, and they know everything. The community is best served when Avada Kashrus is in control. That's Rav Moshe's shita. There are certain issues, there are certain areas of business, and maybe this applies to other areas of business. You know, I walk into the one Con Ed used to have a monopoly, apparently someone thought that was a good idea. Right? So apparently there are certain areas, there are certain businesses that it's assumed that the community is best served when there is a monopoly. The community is best served when there's one group that's in control. So Moshe applied it on a religious level to Avada Kashrus. He thought it's best to have one body that everyone has to answer to. It should be one rabbi per se. It should be one body of rabbanim that everyone has to answer to. Kashrus is very tricky when it's just one rabbi. Very easy to fool yourself into thinking that you're being outlaw, but you're not really being so outlaw. When you have other people around to correct you and tell you, well, wait a second, what about this? And to always ask questions, much healthier. When you have just one guy running his own show, even if he's an outlaw guy in his ear, Shemayim, very easy to split in Kashrus. So it's very difficult to trust Hashkafas that are a one-man show. It has to be, even, you know, Heinemann's not a one-man show. He's the unquestioned leader of his Kashrus organization, but there are lots of rabbanim that work for him, and there are plenty of people that ask him questions. It's very difficult if you have a case where it's just a one-man show, very difficult. So Moshe says so to be a God, and that God has to be the one that everyone goes to. That's just another issue when it comes to Kedusha issues, per se. Now, the whole issue of the Hasagas Gevul also may have changed drastically based on modern business practice, web businesses, things like that, where I'm not really drawing from this community. Remember, the whole issue was, no one else from another community can compete with me here. So what if he opens up an office here and he does all his business over the web? So we're seeing that requires a lot of leeway to figure out exactly when it's unfair competition and when it's not unfair competition. But for the most part, it's hard to say that he's competing within your neighborhood.
Do you want to talk about it?